says a chodesh azel lochem reish chodoshim vishnu hu lechodesh hashana, that the chodesh of Nisan is a chodesh for Kal Yisrael, and it's the first of the months. It doesn't seem like a particularly important parasha in the sense that it's one of the mitzvahs and sandwiched in between a lot of other mitzvahs. But Rashi in Bereishis says that the first famous Rashi, that it says lehoy laskol mechodesh hazel lachem reish chadashim, that Torah should have started with a chodesh hazel lachem, and the only reason why it starts with Bereishis is because the goyim will come along and they'll say listem atem. So the right place to start Torah is a chodesh hazel. And it's very strange. If you'd ask us where Torah should start, if we're looking at Torah as mitzvahs, Anocha Hashem Elokecha is the right place. You're telling me, okay, forget the history, let's go to mitzvahs. Anocha Hashem Elokecha. What's a chodesh elochem? Technically, it's the first mitzvah. Say that, but it's not. It's out of order. Anochi is really a parish of Torah. So if the kasha is that we should start with the parish of Torah, why isn't it Anochi? The Ramban asks another question. He says, what do you mean not to have Bereishis in all the parishes? Many sodas of Emunah are there. You have a lot of important in Yanim there. If you don't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is a Bayra Olam and so on, you're not Bikoros. So you need to tell me the information. Raman gives his teretz. So I want to give a little bit of a hesper. Let's try a little bit of a deeper nekuda. History is important. Why is history important? Because if a person wants to know who he is and what he's going to do and where he's going, and most things that will limit him in life and the opportunities he has to know something of his history. So the genetic material my parents gave me, the home I grew up in, the friends I had, the school, all of those things really determine who I am and where I'm going to. And therefore, in a universal sense, Bereishis is the parasha that's the history of the world. And as such, Bereishis really ought to be the beginning, because understanding the setting for the world is really going to dictate where we are. Rashi's kasha is based on the following nekuda. The higher you go in a Baal Chaim, from the inanimate can't make any changes. Vegetable life can make changes in a certain structured way. Animals can make more change in their lives. But what divides people from animals? Animals have some ability to process information. They you know, as they probe more, the animals can actually count to up to five. There are a few animals that they've proven actually they can keep track of five items, and it's five items. That's something that's proven. They can do different functions at a very low level of intelligence, but it's not different. When we try to mark off the difference between a Baal Chai, we call a fox a smart one of the animals. The reason why a fox is called smart is because he's unpredictable in how he chooses to escape. He does all sorts of tricks when he's trying to run away that really stand out, because most animals are very predictable what they're going to do. So the animal's thinking, the animal's processing, is probably a better word for it, is pretty much follows a psychological algorithm of sorts, and it can be predicted fairly well how an animal will react to different situations. Adam has in himself the koyach of chiddush. A person can think of new ways, new ideas. A person can think out of the box. He can think creatively. The difference between Klal Yisrael and Umas Ha'ilam is on a moral level. Klal Yisrael can change themselves in ways that Umas Ha'ilam can't. Klal Yisrael can recast themselves. In other words, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim is the koyach of Klal Yisrael, it's the mitzvah of Klal Yisrael to create the Metzias. If there's anything we're all beholden to, if there's anything that we were subsumed under, it's time. We're born at a certain time, we die at a certain time, and everything happens within time. When the Torah gave us a mitzvah of HaChodesh Lachem, that we can create Rosh Chodesh and Shanim, that means that Klal Yisrael is the masters of their own fate in a way that no Umas Ha'ilam is. For Umas Ha'ilam, it's harder to make real changes. Klal Yisrael has in themselves the ability to completely disregard what's been till now. Who they've been till now, where they come from, what they've been influenced by. Klal Yisrael has the ability to create their own reality. And that's why, that's the oimik of Rashi's kasha. Rashi's shaila was, since Klal Yisrael can always start with today and remake themselves, independent really of everything that had been there. So Torah should start with Chodesh Lachem. Maybe you can fill us in at some point with a little history, but that's not the starting point for Umas Ha'ilam is Bereishis, because their products are Bereishis, and they can make some changes, some choices, but not extreme choices. If we can undo time and start time at our behest, we start time and we create time, then Bereishis is really unimportant. And where we've been is not important to where we're going to. That's the Pshat Rashi. And that's why it says in the Medrash that this is Chodshei Geula, because Geula really means any time a person who is addicted to substance is not a free person, because he can't choose not to. A person who's in a certain cycle and he does things because it's sort of habit. He does things because it's the society he's in and that's the pressures he's under. He does things because he's been programmed that way. That person is not a ben chayrin. So even though in Mitzrayim the shibut was real, was physical, and it was harsh, but to take them out and to put them in a different environment that's not real chayrus is not really doing anything. Because basically, what's the difference if they're under one rule or another rule? The force of habit is a slave driver. People who smoke for years, they find it as difficult to drop smoking as if somebody would be standing with a whip and force them to smoke. Makes very little difference. HaChodesh Lachem means HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a koyach to Klal Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael has the ability of chiddush, of being mischadish themselves. It could be difficult, it could be very difficult, but it's there. The Torah says, there's a new Torah here now. Whatever happened until today is not relevant to what's going to happen tomorrow, really. It's relevant to maybe how much effort you have to put in. But it's doable no matter where you come from to wherever you want to go to. And that's the Pshat Nachodesh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. It's the first mitzvah Klal Yisrael because it's the content of Klal Yisrael. We're taking on mitzvahs and averis not just within the framework of who we are and make some cosmetic changes. It's the ability for us to do anything, anytime. It's not that it's not hard. It's not that it's easy. That wasn't part of the equation. But that the fact that it's possible, That's what the Achayz Lechem, that's the koyach it gave Klal Yisrael. And be'etzem for Klal Yisrael, this is the beginning of Torah. For us, the beginning of Torah is not Breishis. We need to have a Breishis so that when Umos Olam come and complain, we tell them, well, it never was yours to start with. But for us, it's enough to know that now we deserve it, and that's why we have it. Something I wanted to share, a thought on the parasha. Does anyone want to talk about something or whatever it is? We said we ask for... Yes, Avram.
Just came out of the table after the bris.
Yes.
That question regarding that. It says that man gets a bris, he's like not shalim beforehand, but after bris
yeah.
becomes shalim. So what is it that a woman has that makes them shalim from the beginning? Or makes them shalim at all?
I will say something that maybe today people don't think that way, but a marriage is called a bris. Bris Neurim, Hs Neurim is called Hs Brisecha. The bond with a husband is it gives a shleimus to an isha. A man is also not shalom without a wife, but a very different way, in the sense of a krisas bris. That's called that has a shem bris, and that's part of and within her teva that a. It's called a krisas bris, and it also, in the sense that she flushes out the household and makes it a davar shalom, that's part of the bris. The bris is chal on ishu beisoy, and that makes her part of it. It's one of the issues that today meaning in the last tkufas, a woman's role in Yiddishkeit, as the world has moved away from a woman having a traditional role where just being at home, where being home used to be a full-time job basically, and you know, it became, and labor was physical and hard, it, you know, things have changed in terms of what jobs are like, and women are much more active in the workforce and careers. But it's still, but it's like throwing out the baby with the bathwater. There's a family, a woman in many ways is the anchor of a family. And the realization, because the world doesn't appreciate what a family is, they don't appreciate what a woman is. And that's why two men or two women or two dogs could be a household, doesn't make a difference. There's no sense that a Keres Bias is a woman. And she provides something a man can't provide, and a man's job is to provide things a woman can't provide. And it's, you know, with the fact that one role might be more public or less public, the word important is it's like asking, you know, what's more important, right foot or left foot? Well, both, you know, it makes very little difference, Rahman Islam. So a woman's chelik is as being part of the household. And it does say that marriage is a sort of a sense of krisas bris. What was the answer given at the table? What did they someone come up with? Yes, I see you thinking. So. No.
Where's the bathroom?
Right down, right aside. That's the first door out. Yes, Sammy.
So I understand that we have to daven 3 times a day.
We have to what?
We have to daven 3 times a day.
Yeah.
But what is like? Is there like a more of a practical reason rather than just like Davos made the davening and as I'll say we have to? Like, is there like a practical reason?
Good question. Good point. Let me. I mean, what you're asking is really a core question about tefillah, and it's a very important question. Let me add a question to it. Like, I mean, we assume that God knows what we're missing, because if He doesn't know, He's not much of a God. And we also believe that He caused the missing stuff or whatever it is. What's the point of it? There are two very important nekudas in the davening. One is, let's take an example. Most people don't mind if you use their pen. I don't know how many people have a pen today, but you know, very people. So if I ask you, would you have a pen? And you give me the pen, I use it. You certainly have no problem with that. When you, let's say I use it for a day, okay, and I put it in my pocket, I come back the next day, you feel a little irritated because you want some acknowledgement. You don't have any problem if at the end of the day I say, I'm sorry, could I borrow it tomorrow also, and so on. It's the acknowledgement of it's rightfully yours, and I need to ask you for it. There's a certain sense, I guess, our greatest conflict with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is our sense of self and ownership to our sense of what's his. I was recently, somebody in the area here lost his mother. You probably know who it is. It's not about a year ago, a little under a year ago. And this person is a very erlicher person, and he has a brother who's totally fry. And I mean, the family is not a frum family. He became frum. And I saw a video of the spedim. So he spoke about what a wonderful gift it was to have the mother for 70 years. She passed away at less than 70. And a wonderful person, really wonderful woman. And his brother said it destroyed his faith in God, that God had no right to do it, and he's very angry at him, and so on and so forth. What was the difference? Why? The answer is, one started with the idea, what's mine is mine. God didn't give me my life, didn't give me my mother, my father, didn't give me anything. So all he did was take away my mother from me. How could he do that? The other person started with the attitude, it's a gift. A mother and a mother of that of that person, like my mother was, is a gift from God. So I don't know why I didn't extend the gift, but the fact is, three times a day we sit down and say, okay, I'm not taking it for granted. The fact that I can think, the fact that I can feel, the fact that I can do things, those are things that I don't take for granted. And the asking from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a way of saying, could you extend it? It helps take everything I have and put it in perspective. That's one part that's very important for the truth of it. And the Mela, it's not just a question of moon or believing, it's the attitude. When you have something that you think is yours, then and it's not yours, that's very selfish. It's like, you know, so somebody appropriates, like, you know, like in a camp or on a trip, and somebody takes something of yours and just doesn't. So three times a day, at three very important periods of the day, we give that back. That's one half of why it's so important. The second half is, it also allows for a certain bonding. The asking becomes a way of touching base. So just like, imagine, Rabbi Leff once told a story in yeshiva. I don't think anybody was here when Rabbi Leff spoke in Beis Medrash. It was a few years ago. Probably none of you were. It must have been 5-6 years ago easily. He said over an extraordinary story. He spoke, the question he posed was, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the Nachash that he's going to eat Ofer. And that seems to be a punishment. Well, the question is, Ofer is the most plentiful thing around. So what's the punishment? I mean, he's got his food wherever he goes. He's drowning in it. So why is it a punishment? That was the question. The answer that he gave is not an uncommon answer, but the story that it came with it was a shockingly powerful story. He said when he became first a Rav in Miami, he was 20-something years old, and they call him up from the local school, from the girls' school, that there's a girl who's tried to commit suicide a few times. They would like him to try to talk to her. So he said, you know, he turned white, and he said, I'm a young Rav, and it's not my profession. So whatever it is, there'd been professional help, but they wanted him in the picture also, whatever it is. He went to speak with her. And she told him the following story. True story. This is the story he told us over. She had become a Yesoma at a young age. She had lost her mother at some point. And she was now 17, 18, and her father wanted to remarry. The woman he wanted to remarry did not want a teenage girl in the house, did not want somebody, didn't want her to be involved. And her condition was that she not be part of the household. So the father called her in and he said, "My dear daughter, here's a set of keys to a nice condominium." The father's a wealthy man. "To a very nice condominium here." He said, "The second key is a brand new car that's waiting downstairs." He said, "Here's a credit card that within reason is unlimited. Have a nice life." So that drove her to the extreme position that drove her. When a person, having things, when you cut off from the source, is not a blessing, it's a curse. The Nachash was told, "I have to feed you because I need a Nachash in the world, but I won't have nothing to do with you." And a Nachash is represents the Ra, the Low, or whatever it is, and therefore I don't want you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interaction with us, when a person has periods of distress and needs, and he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of a sudden there's a bonding process that's not easy to have when you don't think that you need anything. So does wanting things and having them fulfilled are part of a process to bond you. So asking for things three times a day provides a vehicle for that type of bonding. I know, Baruch Hashem, you're still kind of at an age when most of you really don't want all that much. You're not yet part of life, and there are a lot of needs and interaction with people. This person needs a shidduch urgently, and this person needs a refuah, and this person needs parnas, and this person needs shalom bayis, and this person needs this problem, that problem. The world is full of needs, but when a person is able to establish that avenue where the needs become a vehicle for bonding God, it creates a tremendous kesha. It almost something that's almost impossible when you feel that you don't need anything. It's like when you're smug and you feel that everything's okay. Then where's God in the picture? And that's what it's there for. And I know it's hard. I know it's not easy. It's not easy for anybody three times a day. And thank God we have pretty much what we need. They're not terrible. Except for maybe a win or two for the team, but other than that, we're kind of very, very, it creates a certain bond, and that's what it's there for. Yes? Daniel?
Why did Hashem create the world and created an Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba? So, Olam Haba is the place of, tranquility and, bleed tzaras.
Yeah.
Why did he create an Olam Hazeh full of tzaras, full of pain and...
You sound like an old man, Daniel.
Yeah.
Let's... you're right. You are right. Let's understand... Let's take a Gemara. And we'll use a Gemara in Halacha. Halacha Gemara... to give us a background for this. If I give somebody a bag of bagels, homemade bagels that we made, homemade cake, I give somebody, I say, "I'm going away this week, New York, could you watch it?" And you begin to see that it's getting moldy or whatever it is. And you have two choices. You can sell it as it is, take out the moldy part and sell the rest of it off, and give me the cash when I come back. Or wait and hope for the best. And even I'm left over like with a few kazesim and leave it for me. The seichel would be that you would want to have the to leave the to sell it immediately and have a few dollars. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is you go a long way to letting it get spoiled before you sell it off. It's based on the concept Adam rotze bekav shelo yose miteisha shel acherim. A person takes pride in something that's his. The tranquility in Olam Haba is real, but it's not ours. Imagine you come to somebody's house as a guest, and the house is beautiful and comfortable way beyond your own house. But it's somebody else's house. And especially if it's your own house that you worked and you paid the mortgage for, you feel very powerful, very good about it. And you like it. This is mine. I worked hard for it. I earned it. I put it together. I painted it myself. I sold the furniture. It's mine. And that's the greatest hana in the world. The tzaras that we have here, they're all part of a big picture of struggling to earn things and making them ours. And that's why, that's this world. If we're able to do what we're supposed to do, then in Olam Haba, it becomes ours. Just like if you worked very hard all your life and you put down and you put away $10 million in the bank, and now there's interest being earned, you don't feel that you're getting tzedakah. You don't feel that you're getting from anybody anything. It's your money, and now it's working for you. If we were to be in Olam Haba always, it's nice, but it's not nice because it's not ours. There's no sense of self. The sense of self is, and I want to give you another mashal, maybe something we experience, not tzaras, but something else. There are some people that are brilliant in a way. They read a page once and they remember it, photographic memory. And they look at a problem, they solve it like this. There's a second person who has to chazer it a dozen times till he knows it. He has to work a problem a dozen times till he figures it out. Who do you think of the two is more, has a deeper satisfaction with his learning or studying? I assure you the second one. I'm sure everybody wishes they were the first one, but it's not like that. Something that comes like this bores you, and you don't feel satisfied. So what? I know it. Of course I know it. I read it, so I know it. I don't forget it, so what's the big deal? But when you work on it, and you sweat, and you accomplish. So in the big picture, this world is the world of sweating, and the suffering is part of that picture, and everything about it. So understanding that there's... We can't get to that tranquility without first passing a world of difficulties. It gives a whole different... Understand that if people were to ask, you know, is the happiest person someone who won a lottery ticket for $500 million? The answer is certainly not. I mean, statistically, it's been shown most of those people spend it in a very short amount of time and usually end up with everything broken, families in jail, drugs, whatever it is. The happiest person is a person who worked hard, built up business, job, career successfully, so that over a lifetime he's worked his way up to being very accomplished. That's the most. That's the happiest person, and that's what Olam Hazeh is. That's all it is. Something this side. No.
What should we keep in mind when we're looking at yeshivas for next year?
I think the first thing is, what do the products of those yeshivas look like, and what is it that you would like to be? If I were able to put if I were to describe that a little more specifically, I would say a place where people open up a sense of striving and ruchnias. And because no matter how long or short you've been in yeshiva, the real issue is afterwards. So if you see that the people seem to have, if they're talmidim, you know, talmidim, not a year, you know, a year hence, 2 years hence, are people that seem like people that something ruchnis opened up in them, and they're enjoying the ruchnis, they want ruchnis, and they have an aptitude for it, I think that that's probably the most important thing. Let's see. Why would you think not? In other words, let's ask ourselves, I'm serious. The neshama of a person is sort of, I guess, it's the makabel for everything we do in this world. Like we're speaking about this world, next world. The neshama is being imprinted by everything. So what you think, what you learn, and if the music if it, and the deeper the music is, the more it leaves an impression on yourself. That's why people are so turned on by music. You know, whether it's good music, whether it's music that's bad, but if it's powerful, it turns a person's tivus on, because that's music has extraordinary power to reach a part of the neshama and the nefesh that words don't. And if it's good music, then it brings out the right vibes in a person. And if it's bad music, it brings out the coarsest part of a person. So it's very powerful. It's that's why it's a tremendous tool. And on the other hand, it's you can also use it to sort of stoke a person's tivus, which is what most of the music is. Chaibi.
Going back to what you said to Sam.
Yes.
That we need sorrow, so many things that we're missing. That's how we make the connection with Hashem.
Yes.
Have a connection. So then what is it that you should be happy with what you have, and you should always be like, you hear these stories about Golem that they wrote sorrow or whatever, but their whole life they had nothing. Nothing ever went their way, they didn't have any money ever, they had children that whatever, they gave them sorrows, whatever it is, and they were always happy. So how do the two things go together? They were always happy.
Good question. Let's bring it back to the davening issue. Let's ask ourselves the following question: how am I allowed to daven for something if Hashem brought it to me? Then it certainly is good. Then why should I be davening? Let's say I don't have what to eat. Well, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it, so shouldn't I be mekabel the din b'tov and so on? It's another way of looking at your question. The answer is as follows. Tefillah is called avoda. This is the setup. We're in this world. No one knows exactly what it is that we all know what we're missing. Which of it is going to be a permanent handicap? Which of it needs us to roll up our sleeves and to work? No one has money in the bank until they work. So you don't wait and say, well, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't really have any money, I'll starve to death. You have a chiyuv to do what it takes to have the physical things you need, whether it's parnasa, whether it's going to a doctor, whether it's finding or doing ishtadlus. All those ishtadlus are appropriate. Tefillah is another dimension of ishtadlus. So just like, let's take parnasa as an example. We have a chiyuv to do parnasa, to work and do what we need to do parnasa. We have a chiyuv to educate our children with as much as we possibly can. Whatever doesn't work, and it's not the fault of our lack of effort, then we say, so that's Ratzon Hashem, and I'm fine with that, because that's the setup that He wants for me. But whatever I can change, I'm obligated to change. It's the same thing like illness. A person is ill, Rahman al-San. So you go to doctors and you do whatever it takes to make him better. If nothing is working, then you say, okay, so this is Ratzon Hashem. There's no more place for my Bechira, and I'm a Kabul. So it's a combination. We never know what is the final Ratzon Hashem. So we're always doing both. We're doing whatever in the area of Bechira, whatever we're allowed to do and have to do, we do it. And whatever it is that doesn't work, then we say, okay, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to work under difficult circumstances. That's part of my way of earning where I'm supposed to be. Yes.
What exactly is the neshama?
So the first thing I'll tell you is we don't know, and let me explain to you why. It's the Rambam speaks about it, not about the neshama, speaks about Rambam, but let me give you a mashal. Let's say lo aleinu, somebody's born blind. He will never be able to understand what a color is. But if he's smart, he can learn a lot of things about colors. So this blind person hears people say it's this tranquil the blue is ocean blue, and it's very tranquil. So the person understands that there's a quality of the ocean called a color quality called blue, and there's a quality of that, and it evokes tranquility. And therefore, when somebody is going to say, "I don't know what color I should paint my bedroom," he'll say, "How about blue? Because that's a tranquil color," and he'll be right, without actually being able to sense it. We don't have the now. We think with our minds. We don't think with our neshama. So our mind is physical, and I can tell you about things that have substance, colors, smells, taste. I can't tell you about a neshama what it is. All I can tell you is it's a dimension of myself that is closest to self in a way that nothing else is. I can tell you that the neshama is the part of me that feels good about good and ashamed with bad, which is something that doesn't, it's not a physical reality. If I did something bad, why is my body so uncomfortable? The neshama is that chelik. Someday will come when I'm going to, my awareness is going to be through neshama, and I know that mitzvahs build it up and averus destroy it, or let's say shrink it, whatever. So I can't, it's not possible to say what it is in a way that would make any sense to me or to you, but we can tell you many things about it and give you some sense of where it is that we sense what a neshama is. The most powerful place is the emotions we have towards right and wrong. That's probably where you feel it the most.
How is one supposed to figure out their goal in life?
So the Vilna Gaon says in Mishle, on the Pasuk, that in the old days they used to go to a Navi and ask him what their purpose in life was and to direct them. So that worked well once upon a time. We have a shortage of Navim today. Or maybe if, since it was given to a Shaita or Cotton, maybe we have an excess of Navim. But whatever it is, we have a real problem. And the truth be said is, it's not simple. For someone who's a little more thoughtful, it's not easy to understand, to have a feeling. You first need to evaluate what your kochos are. And one of the reasons why spending a tekufa in yeshiva, sort of full-time, is it helps you develop in a ruchnistic way, and you get a sense of what your strong points are. One would assume that if a person has kochos that are capable of being used purely in ruchnias, teaching, being mashpia, you know, paskening, things of that nature, one would think that that gets a front seat to other things. But again, it depends a lot on a person's circumstances. It's taking an honest stock of who you are and what you are. I have a acquaintance of mine, he's older than me by a lot of years, and he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and very capable and competent in many ways. And after he sort of learned the kol a few years, he needed parnasa, and he's very bright, so he decided to, he taught calculus in college, and spent the rest of the time learning, and you know, we had parnasa, it was nice. Rav Hutna was his Rebbe, and Rav Hutna felt that he should do a lot more. And he told him, Shleima, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give you all that talent to teach calculus to Irish girls. He said he gave it for much more, and he forced him to do something in Chinuch. He opened up a huge school that's one of the biggest schools in New York and very, very successful. You know, and he uses kochos. It helps if you have somebody to guide you, and you need to be mispalel a lot, because especially if one feels that he has bigger kochos and tremendous abilities, it's not simple. There are many different avenues to go, and a lot of it depends also on the nature of your abilities and what you want to do. Somebody who's, for instance, somebody who has the type of abilities and inclination to be a doctor, that type of person does not usually have an inclination to be a rebbe. It's a different type of inclination. So it has to do a lot with ability, inclination, tefillah, sata d'shmaya. Very, very hard. But it's a question that for somebody who's a little bit of a bal nefesh, it's not easy to come up with a definitive answer. Yes, question.
So I've noticed recently that like Rosh Chodesh, that it's an important day, that it's a special day. We say Yalav Yavo and Hallel.
Right.
But it sort of seems like, at least for me, that it like sort of like a normal day.
Yes.
So wondering what.
It's very interesting. If you'll take a look, Rav Soloveitchik has a hesped on Reb Zev Gold. Zev Gold was one of the Yiddish Mizrahi, and Rav Soloveitchik was friendly with him, and he describes him. The theme of that is he's a Rosh Chodesh personality, and what he means by it, knows what he describes. If you'll take a look at it, you'll find it interesting. If the question, he said, Rosh Chodesh is a weekday. There's nothing that distinguishes it externally, and yet there's a spark of something special, of a new beginning, and so on. And he elaborates on it. And he actually, it's a very beautiful hesped. You can take a look at it. But it's true. It's one of these areas that, especially today, where we don't bring korbanos, we don't have an easy time relating to it. It's a very hidden type of day of kedusha. Yes, we didn't hear. Okay, what's your first name? You.
Simi.
What?
Simi.
Yeah, let's have.
So you know that Jews like have something like built into their like DNA. So, like,
yes.
So like we see like Jews like they like, I don't know, they accomplish a lot of things. Is that because like our beliefs are because of like who, like our built-in traits and stuff like that.
So what's your question?
So, like, what's the difference? Is there a difference between like?
I wouldn't focus. It bothers me, and if you take a look at the Rambam and his Igris, he had a letter from a friend of his who said, "Wow, you became very famous and chashev, and it's great to have like a Rambam being a doctor, this and that." And he writes basically, "I'm not enamored with it. I don't think being famous in the musagim that the world sees is being very special." Doing the right things and being a good person is really what ought to make a person feel good or bad about himself. When we focus on Klal Yisrael being very bright and doing well on the SATs and getting prizes, and it may or may not be true. You know, it's true that they, I mean, that's those are facts. But whether that's because there's something about inherently bright, or it's because we tend to push ourselves and need to succeed, or it's psychological or sociological or evolutionary. There's always explanations. But I don't think that we should focus on that. I think we need to measure ourselves in terms of Tov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't choose us because we do well in SATs, or because we have long noses, or because of anything else. He chose us because Matzasi Levavo Nemal Lefanecha. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking for. So I think we have an affinity for Ruchnius, and destructive, and like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was always very fair, we could be extremely spiritual, and we could also be extremely anti-spiritual. Communism was, which was like against Emunah and everything, was spearheaded by Jews. Hollywood, the Goyim would accuse us that Hollywood is corrupting the morals of American youth, and it's all full of Jews. Unfortunately, they were right. There was a lot of Jews, and because a Jew can be daring. It can be daring in Kedusha, he can dare to believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything that was Zara, and he can dare break the morals of society with disdain. So I think that's a tchuna of Klal Yisrael, which is good and could be used for not good. And I think I would say that that's the defining characteristic of Klal Yisrael. Yaakov. Yeah.
Every single thing. Does that mean that you could like take everything as like simonim for yourself? Like, when do you know like when you take something happens to you like as a simon?
Let me share a story with you. If you have some time, I don't know, does anyone have time restrictions or what's the story time wise? You're all okay. I'll tell you a story that this is going back many years ago. I was sitting Thursday night learning with Chavrusa. I remember who was Peretz Tarshish. He's a Rosh Chaburta in the Mir. His wife is a famous rabbitz and runs the seminary and things. And I was sitting and learning one Thursday night. This must have been in the 80s sometime. Yeah, it was the 80s. And the phone rings. Somebody's at the airport. And he says, I got your number from your cousin. I need a place to stay. And then the call drops. In those days, they had a simonim. And I felt like these little coins that you put into the telephone, like little coins with holes, you have to keep plopping them in. A minute later, he calls again. Because at the end of the day, he's coming. He said he wants to learn in the yeshiva. And he wants to know if he can stay here over Shabbos before he gets into yeshiva, whatever it is. Okay, I didn't know him. He said my cousin recommended it. You know, so quick, it was fine. Said it's a little crowded in the house. I mean, I had 9 kids in 3 rooms, but okay, there's always room for someone. So he came. So an hour later, he gets off of Sheirut. He looks like, I mean, he had like a scraggly beard with a cap, and like a box, you know, not a suitcase, but a box. He comes to the house, very pleasant fellow, very sweet. And I asked him, you know, he's called me yeshiva, where did he learn before? He didn't learn before, really. You know, he had odd jobs here and there. Nothing about him made much sense, but okay. As I said, I don't see how you go to the yeshiva, but across the street is Osameach. Tomorrow morning you go to Osameach, and that's probably the best place for you. So I said, wow, what a gewaldig hashgacha pratis. Imagine, I met your cousin, who told me to come to you, and instead of going to the mirror, I know I should go to Osameach. Excellent. He comes to Osameach the next morning. Osameach tells him, I don't know what they told him, but speaking to him a few minutes, they told him he should look for a job. So he comes back to the house and he says, wow, what a coincidence. I went to Osameach, he told me, and they told me the right things to get a job. So where do I get a job? So I told him to go in Chov Yafar, as a place. Everything was Ashkacha Pratis. He was there Friday, Shabbos. Friday he'd run out of money already. And he asked me if I could give him some money to go to the mikveh, this and that. I didn't know what to do. I mean, there was no reason why he would ever move out. I mean, there was nothing in his life that would ever change that he would move out of the house. My wife told me that I have some hard choices to make. It's either her or him. But it's not going to stay. So, and I was at my wit's end. He wasn't a bad person. He took up that little room. My study now became his little apartment. I subsequently realized he had been married, divorced, with 3 children. Nothing, not a bad person in any sense, but kind of nothing. Didn't do anything to have a job. I don't just... And everything was always... The Ashkenazi process was building up day after day. It was... Finally, in the conversation, he said something about a brother. I went to the phone book. I found a brother of his in Kibbutz Sa'ad. He had a brother who was a doctor in Kibbutz Sa'ad, a very fine fellow. And he says, oh my gosh, how did he get to Eretz Yisrael? He was living with my father, and I guess he must have got money from somebody and bought a ticket. I'll be there Sunday on the first bus to Yerushalayim. And he said, the bus arrives at 9 o'clock. By 9:05, I'll be in your house. And I'll take care of him. I said, I feel terrible, this and that. They said, no, as long as you take care of him, it's fine. And my wife was petrified. He said, he's going to get very angry at us that we snitched and told his brother, this and that. He said, my brother will not be able to figure it out. I'm telling you, he's not all there. And this is just a piece that doesn't work. This at 9:03, my wife, he was sitting and eating breakfast. My wife tells him, you know, you're going to have a visitor soon. Your brother's coming in. He says, what amazing Ashgacha Pratis. And it was, Baruch Hashem, his brother took him, he took him away. But there was something there. What I realized, it was unfortunate. He was an unfortunate person, you know. I mean, there was something missing there. But what happened was, it short-circuited the process. In other words, it became a way of copping out instead of... It wasn't that he was enforcing emunah, it was copping out. the Arabs, the Muslims, have a belief in Hashgacha Pratis that way overwhelms our belief. Everything is predestined. So if I killed somebody, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fault, not my fault. And if I didn't come to yeshiva that day, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fault. One of my daughters told me that a girl came into her class, and I just saw Miss Yaakov with a note, "Please excuse my daughter for coming late. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not return her neshama until 8:30 this morning." So what happens is, it becomes, you start blaming Hashgacha and looking for signs, and you become crippled from it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to use Bechir like we spoke. This world, we're supposed to work with the recognition that without HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's worthless and useless. And it's tough. There are times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly talks to us, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pushing us a certain direction. But you need to ask yourself, does it make sense? Is it right? Or is the pshat, I'm using it as a cop-out? And it's hard. It's very tough. And there are some people very high madrigas that every little thing is hashgacha. And in other words, is hashgacha, I mean the sense they can relate to it as hashgacha. So yes, for me, missing my coat and having to search for a quarter of an hour is a simen min hashamayim. And I need to ask myself why. For other people, it's a simen that you should think twice before you throw your coat down and run off and know where you put your coat before you matriach other people and have people wait for you. That's why it's very important. It's such a critical balance. You can't believe in Hashgacha to the point of it staring what you're obligated to do in any way. And you can't believe in what you're supposed to do if it takes HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the picture. And that's why you have to work all day and daven three times a day to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one of the toughest balances that a Baal Nefesh is, between pushing yourself to work hard as if there is no HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to ask from HaKadosh Baruch Hu as if there's no us. And you need to have the Rachus Adas to be able to balance both. It's not a pasha thing. Who else do we skip? Davi.
If someone is decreed on someone that they get caries.
Yes.
But there's also a rule that a person can be kuna won't happen 1 second.
Yes.
Is there a way that if you're kind of caries, that there's a way to undo that?
Yes, there's tshuva works for everything. And it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu figures out the whole cheshbon. We know picked pieces. But in the whole picture, the schusim and the onshim, all these things, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu weighs them, and there's no way we can't make that cheshbon. But we do know this is a plus, it's a chisaron. But there's no way tshuva helps every single thing there is. Do we skip anybody? Anybody? I only have a last chance. Anybody else wants one more? Anybody else has another question they would like to ask, or thing you want to talk about, or okay, so maybe we'll have a niggin, then we'll bench.